Welcome back to the Dan Prop Show. And before we get to our next guest, our friend Joel Kotkin, I want to play a clip that I played earlier in the show. This from Joy Reid's show over the weekend on MSNBC. Of course it is. It's such a dismal statement, a troubling statement on multiple levels. People need to hear this again, really think about it and discuss it. Michael Harriott, who is a writer for The Root, it's a media outlet, on with Joy Reid on MSNBC, translating what it means for people to say they want to reopen the economy, what the real motivation is, not getting back to work, not making money, not work as soul craft, what the real motivation for white people is in advocating for a reopening of the economy.
Yeah, see, I disagree with the notion that we shouldn't be covering this, because I think it is more than just, I don't care about these black and brown people who are dying. I think that what they're saying quite clearly, when you see the numbers, when you see the statistics, when you see the CDC data, is I want more black and brown people to die. Right? That can't, if you want the government to open up, then you want more black and brown people to die. We see it happening in real time. We see it in Donald Trump's tweets. We see it in the data. There can be no other outcome if you open up what they call their society or the business or the country, unless you see more brown people die.
For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by the aforesaid Joel Kotkin, internationally recognized author on global economic, political, and social trends, presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University, and author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class, which is an excellent book that I have finished. And I think it dovetails actually into what Michael Harriott said, as identitarian and ignorant as it is. It speaks to somebody speaking for other people who he believes have no place in the American economy. Doesn't it, Joel?
You know, first of all, I mean, the statement is so absurd.
Right.
In the sense of, you know, you can't tell what people are actually, you know, what their motivations are in most cases. Second of all, many of the people who, you know, this virus does not go around saying, wow, I want to go kill some, you know, minorities. I mean, the virus hits people who are vulnerable in one way or the other. And some of those people, by the way, are upper middle class whites. I mean, some of the earliest outbreaks were in those commuter sheds in places like Westchester, which, by the way, is by some counts the wealthiest large county in this country, heavily white and Asian. We see the same things going on in some of the suburbs near where I grew up on Long Island, New York, also very heavily white. Now, yes, there is greater morbidity among minority communities, but among poor people in general, people who have various pre-existing conditions, you know, whether it could be diabetes, it could be obesity, it could be a lot of other things. So, I mean, I think one of the things I find so disturbing is that we're in the middle of this pandemic, and, you know, I think there should be a very good debate about what we should do, what we shouldn't do, what needs to be done. I mean, clearly the federal government and the state governments did not prepare very well. But the idea that this is another way that we can divide people from each other is, to me, it's quite terrifying. I wrote about this in Quillette. And by the way, this is not just happening in the United States. Similar conflicts are beginning to emerge in Europe.
Sure.
You know, where basically you have a, let's face it, if I'm an MSNBC host, or me for that matter, I teach remotely. I do talks remotely. I've been working out of my house, you know, one way or another for almost a half century. I'm okay. This has been a very good time in terms of business, but it's not okay for most people. And most people are going to eventually, even those of us who can work at home, are going to find that the companies that may employ us to do this work, including universities, may, if this continues long enough, may not be able to pay us anymore. So, yes, we've been able to escape some of it, those of us who can work at home. But in the long term, we'll all go down. I mean, essentially, this is really you know, what I've been finding really interesting is that some of the, particularly a lot of people on the green economy side, they really see this as a dry run for what they want to see. They literally want to see a 20-30% decline in GDP, because after all, many of them are themselves older, wealthier, already have nice places to live.
And a lot of those zero population growth types want to see a 20-30% decline in the global human population, too, while we're at it. Let's pick up there, because I want to also get back to this construct that you set up about middle-income families in America, the yeomanry versus the clerisy, and how that divide will fare coming out of the COVID-19 outbreak. More with Joel Kotkin. He is a presidential fellow at Urban Futures at Chapman University and author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism. We'll be right back.
This is the Dan Proft Show.
Welcome back to the Dan Proft Show. We're speaking with Joel Kotkin, internationally recognized authority on global, economic, political, and social trends, presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University, and author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class. And you can get some hints of what's in The Coming of Neo-Feudalism by checking out his most recent piece at Colette.com called Viral Politics. What about flying off the conversation we were having before about somebody who is so despondent over the future of America, or his future and black people's future in America, that he is willing to say the government should, I don't know exactly, shut down until we close the gap in life expectancy, or until the deaths from COVID-19 are properly, are exactly proportional to the racial distribution of in America. It's just bizarre reactions, but it speaks to a feeling of, that you're not part of the in crowd in this country, and you sort of deal with that in talking about the bifurcated middle sector of American life, the yeomanry versus the clerisy. Just kind of recap what that is, and how you think this will, that divide will fare coming out of this outbreak.
Well, essentially, the yeomanry is what we might call the traditional middle class. It's, you know, the skilled artisan. It's the small shopkeeper. It's the person who maybe owns a small service business or a small manufacturing company, an independent trucker. That whole group of people who basically run businesses, own small properties, and are intimately involved in the private sector economy, where when the economy gets shut down, they just get obliterated. That's the yeomanry, and they're right. They're really going to have a rough time with this. And by the way, I don't think the government's response has been particularly good for them at all. The second group, the clerisy, is really those people who work for the government, work in what might be thought of as protected institutions, nonprofits, universities, at least for the time being. Of course, the upper bureaucracy, the large part of the medical industry. So I find it really interesting that you have these people who, and I talk to them all the time, say, well, we have to be under lockdown for 12 months, 18 months. And I'm saying, you won't have a country left in 12 to 18 months. I mean, if you literally shut down the entire middle, traditional middle class, and you eliminate a large number of jobs that were done by the working class, you're just going to have some sort of complete social upheaval. Either you're going to have a sort of Bernie Sanders kind of Stalinist regime on one hand, or you'll get some sort of corporatist authoritarian regime on the other, which I think is probably more likely. This republic cannot stand long term being shut down for 12 to 18 months. There are many things that we could do. I was just reading a very interesting interview with the health minister of Sweden. There are ways that you can open up at least some things in the economy. Many European countries are already reopening factories and beginning to let stores open, and in some cases even restaurants with certain restrictions. I think you need to be careful, but in the current situation, the only winners of this are going to be A, the people in the bureaucracies and the people in the expert class who can now essentially tell us whether we can breathe or not. And I think the other beneficiaries will be the tech oligarchs, who are really the powers in this society, because as we go more and more online, as we destroy the last vestiges of independent small business, the only winners are going to be people like Amazon. They're going to be the companies that can afford online delivery, and they're going to be eventually Wall Street-backed chains, which will go in and take your local taco stand or your family-owned Chinese restaurant and make them parts of chains, because the independents aren't going to be able to survive.
Yeah, there's a suggestion, too, by some analysts, if the recovery isn't there in a few months, you're going and you've got unemployment at north of 20% still. In other words, if it's an L-shaped recovery, very slow, then you're going to send as much as a one-third of mortgages into default. 1.5 times as many foreclosures as occurred after the housing bubble collapsed in 2008. And, if you don't have jobs and you're saddled with debt, then you default. And now you're really talking about sort of the tearing of the social fabric that you're describing, as people, particularly in the public sector, which is recession-proof, we find, again, you're going to have, people acting desperately in what would be desperate times.
Well, and I also think that you may very well see, in some cases, even eventually, like let's take a university. A university can say, "Oh, well, we're going to shut down for 18 months." How many parents are going to be willing to fork out $60,000 a year so that kids could stare at a computer screen?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to eventually hit the clerisy. They just don't. We just don't know when, and they don't seem to be aware of it. If you take a look at things that may happen down the road, the states and cities are already in terrible shape, Illinois being among the worst, as you well know.
Yes.
Eventually, you're not going to be able to pay people. We're already seeing here in California, which is, in much better shape than Illinois fiscally, although not in great shape at all, we're seeing layoffs. A friend of mine who was city manager of Santa Monica just quit. He was having to do large scale layoffs. So, particularly in states that are already bloated, Illinois, California, New York, New Jersey, I think eventually elements of the clerisy will start to feel the impact. The dynamic is going to be, do we have this kind of very painful, long recession, or do we end up having to change the very nature of how the society operates and move to a society where, the large proportion of the population is completely dependent on government subsidies?
He is Joel Kotkin, internationally recognized authority on global, economic, political, and social trends, presidential fellow in urban futures at Chapman University, and author of The Coming of Neo-Feudalism, A Warning to the Global Middle Class. Joel, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Take care.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is the Dan Proft Show.